Chapter 9, Human Behavior, page 150, Activity 4, Listening for Digressions.
This afternoon I'm going to talk about a topic that affects every person in this room, group dynamics. Every person in this room is part of some group, right? For example, you belong to this class, and I'm sure that you belong to other groups too, don't you? Your family, right? A social club, perhaps? A soccer, golf, or tennis team? The International Student Association? What else? Help me out.
Pi Phi sorority.
Exam study groups.
A business students discussion group.
Volunteers for a clean environment.
Film club.
Good, thanks. At any one time, the average person belongs to 5 or 6 different groups. A large part of our sense of identity comes from belonging to these groups. In fact, if I asked you to describe yourself, you might say, for example, I'm a student, a basketball player, and a member of the film club, wouldn't you? Well, today we're going to look at 2 interesting aspects of group dynamics, or how groups function. First, we'll look at patterns of communication in groups. And then we'll look at how groups affect individual performance. In groups, communication seems unsystematic, random, and unplanned, doesn't it? Generally, we don't see any pattern of communication at all. By the way, you all went to the discussion section yesterday, didn't you? Well, what did you notice about the conversations?
Everyone kept interrupting me.
Yes. And if you were having a good discussion, people kept interrupting each other and talking at the same time, didn't they? I'll bet students talked pretty much whenever they wanted. Well, let's see what researchers have found concerning communication patterns and group dynamics, or how groups function. The first pattern they have found occurs in groups where there is a lively discussion. It seems like everyone is talking at once, but actually only a few people are talking. And it doesn't seem to matter how large the group is. Only a few people talk at once. Do you know how many? What do you think?
3? A few is 3, right?
4?
2?
Yes, well, the answer is 2. 2 people do over 50% of the talking in any group. Now, let's look at the second pattern researchers found in group dynamics. When we're in a group, sitting around a table, perhaps, who do we talk to? As an aside, I must tell you that all the research I know about has been done in the United States and Canada, so the results I have to share with you may only be valid for these countries. Well, as I started to say, who do people talk to when they're sitting together at a table? People across the table? Or people sitting next to them?
Across the table?
Next to them?
Well, the research shows that in groups of 8 or more, people talk to the people sitting across the table from them, not to the people next to them. Why do we talk more to the people sitting opposite us? Probably because in our culture, we usually make eye contact with the person we're talking to, and it's not as easy to have eye contact with someone who is sitting next to us. It's much easier to maintain eye contact with someone across the table. To go somewhat off the topic for a moment, if you're planning to be a matchmaker and start a romance between 2 of your friends, don't seat them next to each other at your next dinner party. On second thought, maybe seating them at a corner of the table would be best, wouldn't it? Then they would be very near each other and would only have to turn slightly in order to look into each other's eyes. Well, back to business. Now, there's one more point that I'd like to mention regarding conversations in groups. And this might be important to the new romance at your dinner party, who knows? The research also shows that, in general, the person in the group who talks the most is regarded as the leader of the group. However, it's true that this person is not usually the most liked in the group, isn't it? DJ Stang did some research that showed that the person in the group who talked only a moderate amount was liked the most. What use can we make of this information? A new romance would be affected by this aspect of group dynamics, wouldn't it? But enough of romance and dinner parties. I now want to discuss another important aspect of group dynamics, the effect a group has on an individual's performance. The research tells us that sometimes the effect of the group on someone's performance is positive, and sometimes it's negative. It took quite a while for a social psychologist to figure out why this is true. Some research showed that people did better on a task when they were doing it in a group. It didn't matter what the task was, whether it was slicing tomatoes or racing bicycles. People just performed better when other people were there. It also didn't matter whether the other people in the group were doing the same task or just watching. So competition was not a factor. The first person to notice this phenomenon was Triplett.
Excuse me, but what was his first name? It wasn't Tom, was it?
I'm sorry, I don't remember. Please come by my office if you want the complete reference. Anyway, as I was saying, Triplett's research was done quite a long time ago, in 1898, in fact. He watched bicycle racers and noticed that they did much better when they raced against each other than when they raced only against the clock. This behavior surprised him, so he conducted a simple experiment. He gave a group of children some fishing poles and string. The children were told to wind the string around the fishing poles as fast as possible. Half of the children worked alone. The others worked in pairs. Interestingly, the children who worked in pairs worked faster than those who worked alone. Well, you're probably not interested in winding string around fishing poles faster, but you are interested in doing math problems better, aren't you? F.H. Allport had people work on math problems alone and also in groups of 5 to 6. He found that people did better in the group situation than when they worked alone. The theory behind this type of research which demonstrates that people do better when they work in groups, is called social facilitation theory. Let me digress a bit on this matter of having an audience. In this way, we're like a number of other creatures. Ants, for example. Chen did a laboratory experiment with some ants as they were building nests. Chen had some of the ants work alone, and some of the ants work with one or two other ants. Guess what? Ants worked harder when they worked with other ants than when they worked alone. Another famous study was done with cockroaches. Zajonc Heingartner and Herman watched cockroaches find their way through a maze while trying to get away from a light. As you may know, cockroaches hate light. They are photophobic, right? The researchers had the cockroaches go through the maze alone, and then had them go through the maze with an audience of 4 other cockroaches. The cockroaches reached the end of the maze faster when they had an audience.
No way!
Really?
You're kidding, right?
Really?
No, really. This is true. Well, to continue, as I mentioned earlier, there is also research that demonstrates the opposite, that individuals perform worse, not better, on tasks when other people are there. The theory behind this research, which shows that people do poorly in groups, is called social inhibition theory. R.W. Hubbard did an interesting experiment on this. He had people learn a finger maze. This is a maze that you trace with your finger. The people who had an audience did worse than the people who did the maze alone. So how can we explain these contradictory results? Zajonc finally came up with a possible reason why people sometimes perform better and sometimes worse in front of an audience. He found that the presence of an audience facilitates or helps you with what you already know how to do. That is, if you know what you are doing, having an audience helps you do it better. But if you don't already know how to do something, you will probably make some mistakes. And if you have an audience, you will continue to make mistakes. He pointed out that when you are first learning something, you are better off working alone than practicing with other people. So, to recap, the research shows that people generally perform better in groups, except if they are performing a new task. In that case, they work better alone. And just let me mention in passing that if you can manage it, you should take tests on a stage in front of a large audience with a group of people who are also taking the test. Not very practical, though, is it? And I wonder if it's really true for every task we learn. What do you think? Well, let's start with that question next time. See you then.